Hello and welcome to episode 84 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we are joined by Oh No Video Games, Martin Felder.
Hello, it's me again.
We decided to kidnap him, or rather I did, and then everyone else kind of fell in line because that's what happens.
What, are you saying that other people were like secretly going like, oh no, I don't know if I feel okay, oh no. He's only been on like six times.
Well, she's the one with the gun, so.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realise that. I should probably be more respectful.
There are horses and there are heads and there are beds, and that's all I'm going to say on that matter.
Horses, heads and beds?
Yes.
Are there sheds?
They're reds. Sheds.
As ever, you can find show notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment and find links to our social accounts. Plus, you can get in touch with us and ask questions or comment on the show via email at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. And yes, we are still available on iTunes, but this week we got added to Stitcher. So if you've been wanting to sort of listen to us via your Android device on an app that actually works...
Ooh.
Go us. You can do that now. So there'll be links to our Stitcher page in the show notes. And also, I would like to point out that Hex Dimension is looking for contributors to help out. We especially would like to talk to you if you want to write whatever the heck you want, as long as it's not too rude, because we don't do rude, about stuff like, you know, tabletop or, you know, card games, or if somehow you've been to an epic LARP session. We'd love to hear about that.
Or just a bit of a geek in general.
Yeah.
She's not kidding about the rude thing. I did submit a 5,000 word article that was just the word bum 5,000 times, but like that's been rejected, so, you know.
Well, I wrote a script translation into seven languages of that crime scene investigation scene in the first episode of The Wire.
Yes, great. It's important to know how they say it, you know?
It is, yeah.
Okay, what are we talking about, though, really, this week, Paul?
Okay, well, we're talking about Red Dwarf 11 to hit screens in 2015. Appalling videos from the EGX Rest hit interweb are removed.
Yeah.
That's a bit mouthful. Time Cop reboot is chugging along nicely. Well, not sure whether nicely, but yeah.
Yeah.
Nintendo Directs offer insight into Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS, and Tomodachi Life. And our feature for this week is game genres we love or loathe.
But, you know, I think I want to talk about this Red Dwarf 11 because, you know what, I have a slightly guilty thing to admit to with Red Dwarf 10. Like, maybe I slept through most of it.
No, that was back to where I thought you slept through.
No, I ended up sleeping through 10 as well.
Really?
Well, yeah, because it was on so late, and then I'd, like, just kind of drift off after the first 15 minutes.
So how many seasons have you actually slept through then? 8, 10?
Quite a few. I've managed to stay awake for the earlier seasons. I have a vague idea of what's happening through fevered dreams and the such like that may have ensued as a result of overhearing, you know, Rimmer and stuff talking. But
you do like high sci-fi, don't you?
No, we're not bringing the off-air debate onto here. That's for another episode where we will clearly have to have some kind of adjudicator
and referee
and
boxing match,
yeah.
With robots.
With robots, yeah.
Cyber boxing.
Yeah, that's low sci-fi. I'm sorry.
You're just going to get some Rock'em Sock'em Robots on one side, write like a bunch of brand names on the robot. so that's like high sci-fi, kind of like, whoa, this is what the future would be like. And on the other side, make it like powered by magic or something, I don't even know. And just make them fight and see who wins.
On four wheels.
That's my... How good, by the way, is that as an explanation of high versus low sci-fi? Brand names versus magic. That's where I'm coming from. That's my...
Adjudicated by the ghost of Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Red Dwarf 11, so it's coming back in 2015. It's going to obviously air on Dave as the previous season because they're one of the main funders. Filming starts in October this year. I'm actually kind of surprised that it's not going to be aired until late 2015.
That is a bit odd. Mm.
It's like, I just seems like an incredibly slow turnaround for a series that's starting filming this year. Unless, of course, it's just a scheduling.
Yeah, the only explanation that I can think of really is that they've already got the schedule up until that point, which is, I would imagine that would be a daft kind of thing to do, to be honest, though. I mean, surely you'd want at least, you know, kind of couple of, you know, segments open so that, you know, you can actually put in more relevant topics if, or programmes if, you know, the need arises.
We can't have already filled it up with repeats of Top Gear and QI, surely.
I have to admit that...
Say that.
I have to admit that while I like watching QI, I kind of got to the point where if I flip over to Dave and QI is on, I can't watch it because I've seen... so much QI now.
Or Mock the Week.
Or Mock the Week, yeah. Same deal, can't handle Mock the Week anymore. And I like Dara.
Mock the Week after a while. But yeah, I do like Dara, and I like his, was it the School of Hard Sums?
Mm. Yeah.
Although I think Emily really hated that.
Yeah, I hate puzzles like that. And that's a topic for in a little while. But yeah, so Red Dwarf 11 is going to be a ways. But I'm going to move on next to events that transpired over the last few weeks that weren't fully realised or aired until last week. It turns out that a bunch of, for want of, actually no, just because it's the easiest way and the easiest way to call them, a bunch of dicks kind of went around EGX Rest.
That's way more polite.
I know.
Yeah.
EGX Rest and filmed.
Are you going to go all Adam Hills on?
Not sure yet. But sort of filmed women at Res, and they were actually being quite rude. The one video involved a poor woman who'd been employed by Twitch to oversee the booth. It turns out that the woman didn't like know much about Twitch, and she wasn't dressed like a booth babe. I'm going to give them that. But at the same time, the dicks involved in the video were doing their best to completely undermine all her any credibility that she might have had as just a representative of the company, and sort of like totally for the wrong reasons, because they were just trying to slip her up the entire time.
Mm.
And then the second video, which actually was worse, was one of the other guys from this pair going around and how do I describe it? Going up to women and asking them really
just harassing them.
Harassing them and asking them really inappropriate questions and being really unpleasant towards them. And, yeah, the videos have since been taken down, which is for the best.
Oh, but don't forget that these people are the type of people that turn around, that would turn around and say, oh, well, no, we don't need feminism, we're equal. Really? Because you don't see groups of girls going around, you know, shaming guys.
To be fair, it would be nice to see a few more, because there's some videos around where, you know, you get women doing the kind of harassment things that quite often are applied to them by men. Just kind of reverse roll it. I like those videos.
Yeah, but they're usually done tongue-in-cheek.
This is true. This wasn't done very tongue-in-cheek. This was just being, let's just troll these women that were there.
Yeah, because that's what it was. It was just going... I mean, I missed the video, you know, that those specific videos, but I know the type. And I know the type who make it. They're just pathetic, sad wankers who know that because other people have got... you know, sort of social barriers. They don't want to come across as complete bastards that they can just push and push and push, and it will make most people less and less likely to respond in kind.
It's just, it's taking a space where it's already, like, I feel like Rezzed is one of the better shows I've ever been to, but it's still undeniably very male-dominated. It's majority male, and most of the... you know, booths, it's a very masculine space and making it even more unpleasant for women to be in. And in a very, like, conscious way, it's going out specifically targeting women and saying all this homophobic shit to them. And just, it's so awful. It gets my goat so much, you know? And it happens a lot. And it, like, it makes me sad that that's now happening at Rezzed. Mm. And I feel like what I want to see now, what the next step is, because a part of me would just like if this had never happened, but a part of me is also like, well, these people exist in gaming culture, and that's disgusting. And while that's not an inevitability, you know, at some point they're going to have to deal with this. I want to see what Rez do about it, you know?
I think it's not just that, because, I mean, you can understand it if, you know, basically these guys were being unpleasant to this girl off camera. It's the fact they're actually actively going out and trying to make entertainment out of it.
Yeah.
I think that really undermines everything.
That is just bizarre. It's alien to me. I just don't get it. Because they're the ones with the camera.
Mm.
So they're already in, you know, the in a position of power.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones that, you know, as soon as they, you know, well, you've seen it yourself. As soon as you turn the camera on someone, their behaviour will change.
Yeah.
They'll either want to avoid it, or they'll not want to cause too much of a fuss, or they'll think, well, you know, I can't do this or that because it's going to end up on the web anyway.
Or play up to it. There's so many different types of reactions that you get to, like, cameras being pointed at you.
There's a sense of vulnerability to it. I mean, there's already when someone is, like, harassing you, then you're always, you know, checking, because, like, you don't know who, like, in that situation, the girls didn't know who these guys were. They didn't know if they're, like, violent or going to attack someone. I mean, sure, you're in the middle of rest, but still, you know. And when you've got the camera there as well, and you're potentially going to be on the receiving end of the backlash for whatever these people masquerading as YouTube celebrities are, then you, oh, God.
I mean,
so difficult.
It was clear.
It's form of bullying at the end of the day.
It's absolutely bullying.
It is.
And it was also clear that the style they were trying to emulate was that of somebody like KSI.
Yeah.
Who got banned from Eurogamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everybody wants to be like him.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, have you seen, I had a look into, I feel like we should name these people. It was the JP Games, Jordan Patrick, and a guy called Vinny, who goes by Vinny Dajian on YouTube and Twitter. And it was put up on the channel Adam Plays YT. Adam Plays YouTube, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had a look at the Vinny guy's other channel, and most of his videos are just him walking around town centres doing his trolling thing, which is to say harassing random people.
Oh,
and just fucking... Sorry.
Hasn't he got anything better to do?
I will point out that, you know, you mentioned that Vinny...
Yeah, yeah.
He goes by Vinny the Twat.
Yeah, which...
So, yes, you are.
I think so what I'm interested in...
Please show up on Eurogamer so I can just ban you repeatedly. I'll make it my life mission. I'll just try... I don't know where you are, but I will find you and I will ban you.
I know I'm getting old now and I'm getting sort of senile and all that decrepit shit, but...
Yes.
Why would you ever want to be seen like that for first up? You've got the potential of having millions of people watching you, and you really want to look like the biggest, saddest twat on the earth.
You
know the type of bullies where when you're in school, they bully you.
They're just showing off. And, it's a thing. You know, they want to be the people who can just, you know, they're the ones who can get these reactions.
To me, it's not even showing off. It's just...
It's not, no.
It's a waste of... It's basically wasting our valuable oxygen.
Sorry, Paul.
That's right. But they're the type of bullies that would actually go actively out and target you. And then when you get stroppy about it, then they'll be like, oh, can't you take a joke?
Yeah.
As though it's like your fault that, you know, you're being bullied or something.
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
I think the thing that I'm now interested in, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Wild Rumpus. As an event, it's a indie games like event kind of club night thing that runs in London. It's happened in, I think they've done one in Toronto. They did one at GDC. It's run by a couple of people who I sort of vaguely know through stuff, but it's got kind of big. They've run like 5 or 6 of them,
right.
And basically it's all like experimental games and stuff that only works in this social environment. But anyway, the thing that happened recently, I don't know 100% of the details. But apparently at the GDC one, someone was being harassed by one of the other attendees. And the organizer of the Wild Rumpus, Mary, I think her name is. Anyway, she put up a blog post saying, okay, we are so upset that this has happened. Here's, you know, we're sure... because that's the nature of club nights, that this probably isn't the first time this has happened, and this is just the first time someone has felt comfortable enough to talk to us about it, and here's exactly what we're going to do to tackle this in the future. And they said, we're putting up a safe spaces policy, we're going to get much more visual security involved, we're going to basically step up our game a lot, because this is a thing that started out as like a small night where they would have one room and a bar or something like that.
Mm.
And it's evolved into them renting out warehouses and things. So it's got kind of big.
Mm. Yeah.
And like, that's what I'd really like to see from REST, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That's the reaction I want to see. I want to see them say, okay, this is our safe spaces policy. Now this has happened, and it's probably not the first time something like this has happened. It's just the first time something's got really big. Here's how we're going to deal with it. And I feel like that's really the measure of this story, where they go from it, you know?
To be fair, that could be the case of like not just like stuff in gaming, but you know,
most cons.
Can be applied to, you know, so many different places. This whole concept of acknowledging that there's a problem and trying to tackle it rather than trying to sweep it under the rug or downplay it.
Absolutely. I mean, I know what REST have done is ban the people who did it, but I would really like to see them step up their game and say, okay, this has happened. This probably isn't the first time. Here's how we're going to stop anything like this ever happening again. That's what makes me respect a space, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, they've been very good with you know, past things, because they've had a lot where they've just wanted both exhibitors and the people attending to, you know, just behave.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a, you know, please behave. And the first time we see you not behaving, we will do something about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was that thing with the, you know, the not so much booth babes, but in a sort of Virgin Media hot pants girls.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got them to, you know, cover up and, you know, have said, you know, people can attend wearing what they want, but there will be no booth babes.
Yeah. You're talking about like a regular Eurogamer now, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've not been to REST.
REST is really great, I think, because, and you know, it's another reason.
I would have liked to have gone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's another reason why I'm like upset it happened at. I mean, you know, I'm upset it happened anyway. But REST, it doesn't feel like the show where this kind of thing would happen. I mean, obviously, I'm not the one who would notice it because they're not going to be harassing me. Mm. But you know, I want them to knuckle down and really get a good policy on this, some like good enforcement, and to deal with it well, you know. That's what I'm looking out for now. I think
the thing is that living where I do, we're in Cornwall, so there's not many cons. It's a lot of effort for us to actually go to something, because they're pretty much, you know, it's all pretty much out of county.
Yeah.
And the couple of things have happened around lately. They've been really small, and we've known the organisers and stuff, so nothing dodgy's happened. But it's stuff like this that I'm kind of like, well, once I'm driving and I'm thinking of going up to maybe Bristol again or Cardiff or back to London or maybe Birmingham or something for various events, and it just kind of makes me think, I hope nothing like this happens.
Yeah.
When I go up there, it makes me feel a bit less confident about going to events like this.
Well, to be honest, I'll be there with you.
At the same time.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, these kinds of things are very rare, but they should not be happening at all.
It is absolutely something which just comes as a result of the tidal wave of bullshit that is a lot of gaming culture, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a gigantic ongoing mess that we have to, you know, it sucks that we have to tackle it. And this is why I say, you know, EGX really need to get a solid policy on this, because this isn't a one-time incident, you know? This isn't just these two aberrant jerks who are stepping out and being jerks and ruining it for the rest of us. This is something which keeps happening in lots of different places, and they need to address it and get bigger with it, you know?
Well, the reason, as you know, mentioned the Eurogamer Expo, is it's the same people who organise this. A few of the same people who organise it are involved. So they're aware of the things that, you know, crop up, and, you know, if one happens at one, then going to be looking out for it at the other.
Yeah.
So,
apparently the people involved had previously applied for press passes to this September's Eurogamer Expo anyway, and they've since had them removed. And this is after the pretty much all the tickets are sold out anyway, so it's not like they're going to be able to buy some, in theory. So, yes. I'm going to move us on now to a bit of reboot, reimagining news that being, you know, the Time Cop reboot that's been slowly chugging along, because reboots are all Hollywood does now, pretty much.
Yeah, well, they fudge it. Fuck it off. That's what I could say to that one. Fuck the damn things off.
Why Time Cop?
I don't know, I think...
Why bring back Gremlins? Why bring up back the Goonies?
Yeah.
Why bring back Police Academy?
I'm sorry, I wasn't particularly... Like, once I was old enough to understand the films, was not particularly impressed by them.
It's like the American version of Carry On films, but with, you know, police officers instead.
Look, he's a woman, she has boobs. How amusing.
I tell you what,
after the fourth one, it just sort of died off.
Have you gone back and rewatched Airplane at any point recently? Because that film I don't think it stands up to the test of time anymore. It's pretty racist.
I still like it, but yeah, it's very much of its time.
Mm. Yeah. I can understand there are still some jokes, but you watch it now and you're like, wow. There's a lot of racism in this film. Yeah. This film's really racist.
I think one of the few jokes that manages to make it through is the drinking problem one. That's just about it.
That and Leslie Nielsen kind of coming through into the cockpit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing, you know, I'll always be on board for the goofy jokes. It's the it's the ones which are less goofy.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked? Which, in a way... summarise it the 1970s.
Oh, I'm going to move us back to Time Cop. I'm going to travel forward from the 70s to Time Cop to 1994 and the world of Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I would like to point out, I'm not sure how many of you dear listeners know this, but I'm not actually much of a fan of Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just putting that there. So, you know, as long as he's not involved in the remake, I'll be perfectly happy.
Is he the Expendables franchise now, isn't he?
Have you seen his reality TV show?
What?
I strongly recommend Jean-Claude Van Damme's reality TV show.
You see, I'm in the Steven Seagal camp, so I have to hate Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's fair enough.
Does that mean you like all your action sort of sped up so he doesn't look quite as doughy?
To be fair, it was like late 90s, early 2000s, when that started to become an issue. So the really good Seagal films.
It's hilarious when you see the first film with this is all very obviously sped up because he can't shift his arse.
But currently, with the Time Cop remake, Mark and Brian Gunn, who wrote the screenplay for Journey to a Quantum Holy Reporter, looking to be involved with the script for the Time Cop remake, and apparently a guy called Mark, was it Mark Schmuger? Schmuger? I don't know how I can helpfully pronounce his name.
That guy with the thing.
he's involved in producing the film, and he may have been involved in the whole WikiLeaks film that came out last year. Universal,
we all remember that.
Universal are still in control of things. And they're one of the studios that likes remaking things at the moment. So this is just fall on form for them.
Have they announced any stars for you? I mean, have they got Kermit the Frog to be the Time Cop or something?
Kermit.
He's popular now, so it's possible.
In all possibility, maybe there was a Time Cop skip in one of the like Muppet Tonight kind of shows in the 90s. It's just we don't remember it. I could imagine there being one.
I think one of the things that...
If Alvin and the Chipmunks can cover RoboCop...
From what I remember of Time Cop, the only thing that I really, really remember strongly is the fact that something wouldn't... Like, the bad guy...
Yeah.
He basically got dissolved or, you know, kind of went into this glutinous kind of state because his future self and his present self touched. And it's like, yeah, but they wouldn't even have the same molecules because your body regenerates.
Shut up, science.
It's called Time Cop.
I've just remembered now, through my trauma, possibly in a past life. one of the most horrible bits of remake news I've heard lately.
What's that?
Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's Universal again.
Yeah, that's what reminded me.
God damn you all.
It's like, oh, we're not happy with the fact that we've had a TV series in the past 10 years. We're going to do a film remake as well. Yay!
Maybe someone thought, all this has happened before, and all this will happen again, because we'll remake it.
Can I just say, there was another interesting piece of news as well.
Oh, yeah?
Just to really annoy Retroid now. Equalizer.
No.
I was saying that. My first response was that, and then I read that Denzel Washington's up for the lead role, and I was like, ooh, hang on.
Now, that could be.
That could work,
actually. Mm.
And then I read a bit about the Goonies, so I just jumped out the fucking fourth room window.
Can I put my hands up and think, you know, and say that I thought the Goonies were shite?
I wasn't that fond of it.
I didn't really watch it as a kid.
I remember what? Hearing about it. We got the video from, you know, the video shop.
Yeah. Yes,
the video from the video shop. Mm. We rented a video of this.
I remember those times.
But when there was an option between VHS, Betamax, and Video 2000.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just silence.
Yep. Just, I can't. I don't know what half those words in that sentence were, so I'm out.
Well, the Xbox One looks like Betamax.
Ah,
yeah.
Xbox One is Betamax. No, that's unfair.
Betamax was Sony, wasn't it?
Betamax was better, so the Xbox One is not Betamax.
Betamax does what Xbox don't. No, that don't.
You can talk with a friend while watching a crap film using it. Beta Xbox One. We got it out of the little corner shop that next to the curry shop on the tiny little high street, and got it home, watched it. Just yeah, I was a child at the time, and I thought it was a big crap. So I can't understand when you hear about Americans going and the Goonies, childhood films, the memories, really, the Goonies.
Yeah, it was one of my favourites.
Well, it was or it wasn't?
It was.
Ah.
Sorry. But no, I love that.
Sorry. I can maybe see how, but I like the Explorers.
I want to go back to Time Cop for a moment.
No.
I got a point. The point is that while I was absolutely dreading the RoboCop remake, having watched it, it was reasonably good. However, the RoboCop film was a pretty decent piece of source material in the first place. Now, Time Cop is already a middling science fiction film.
Yeah, that's my entire thing with it. Time Cop?
Well, they may, make it into a better film.
We're going to reboot Crossroads.
I bet it's going to end up being more like Jet Li's The One, but it's just time travel rather than interdimensional.
I know, to be honest, I quite like Jet Li's The One.
Exactly, but it came after Time
Cop. It's probably
Cop.
One of those films that is like a guilty pleasure for me, because I know that some people kind of consider it to be,
Did Retroid just say reboot Crossroads?
Yeah, I know they did.
They tried, and then that lasted.
Did they?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah, they did.
Post 2000,
I believe.
Yeah, I remember that.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Was there rumours of rebooting Dallas? I can't remember.
That happened.
Yeah.
That happened.
He shot JR again.
Did they?
Causing a time paradox.
I'm going to move us on to the Nintendo Directs of last week, which were all kinds of strange and amazing in varying levels and degrees for different reasons. And
yay! Was it really?
Yes, it was.
Did you see the Tamagotchi Life one?
Yeah, that was insane.
That looked fucked up, man.
At first, I thought it was like a parody video or something like that.
I love
the fact that you can actually create these little Miis resembling your family and that, and then just have them try and get them fall in love with each other and shit and just ruin their life and cause high drama. I mean, what the fudge?
I heard about that. I've not seen the video.
People's heads in the middle of the sea as you stand on a veranda. Oh my god.
You know what? Like, I'm glad it looks like Nintendo doing what I think they do best, we haven't seen a lot of for a while, I think, which is just total goddamn lunacy. Like, Tomodachi Life doesn't look like something that makes any sense. It just seems ridiculous. It's like, it's The Sims made by Nintendo, and that's exactly what I want. That looks so absurd and great.
There's a lot of weird shit that only sees release in Japan, and I would love to see more of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, because it's the classic being, of course, that it's only by chance that Animal Crossing came to the West.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Despite their best efforts.
Well, I think it took a petition to get Smash Bros. Over to, like, the US and UK as well, if I remember rightly.
Oh, for real? That seems like an obvious port.
Well, now it does, but I mean, at the time, I would imagine that would be a major risk.
And I just also,
I'm waiting for more DLC on PlayStation Battle Royale. I'm not.
And also, I just want to say how great it is that they're still calling it Tomodachi Life. Like, that word, that translates, you know, in the video, they say it translates to, like, friends.
Yeah.
So that's an amazing name for it, because... that doesn't mean anything. I love that they're, like, to us, you hear Tomodachi, that's not a word which, like, that's not a Japanese word which everyone knows. People are going to see that and have no idea what it is. This is such, like, a left-field move for Nintendo. It seems absurd, and I'm stoked.
They really need more left-wing moves. They really...
I'd love more left-wing moves. If it was, like, Tomodachi Life, where it was just, like, Karl Marx. And... That'd be great.
Would that be like the antidote to Animal Crossing?
There are no scores in this game because everyone is equal.
Yeah. You get a little house, and then he informs you that all property is theft, and you know. I would play the hell out of that.
There's only one book I need to read.
But on the other side, we had the Super Smash Bros. News for Wii and 3DS. Charizard's a playable character.
Yay!
Yeah. And there was a Pokemon I didn't recognise.
Greninja.
Green Ninja. He's one of my favourite Pokemon in Pokemon X.
Okay, so I haven't got that far, because I've only played about 40
like
700 hours.
Now.
Some 600, 700, something like that, yeah.
I've still only played one Pokemon game, so it got to the bit where it was like, here's the Pokemon that are going to be in it, and it was just like a bunch of sounds to me. It was just sounds and shapes. I didn't know what they were.
I've played Pokemon Blue.
Yeah, I've only played Red, so...
I haven't played any Pokemon.
Get out!
To be fair, I think I was interested in it the one time, and then I found out that in order for me to play one of Emily's copies, I'd have to reset the game, and I was like,
It was one of my very complete copies for Pokedex.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that to Emily.
You wouldn't be allowed to.
I mean, I've only played Red, but all of... You know, I have various friends who are very into them, and... they are extremely good games. Like, it seems like, I mean, I can see being turned off by it being Pokemon. You know, just being like, it's a thing for kids, and it's got that weird cartoon and the Pikachu. But they are really solid RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They are very good. They are deservedly a success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving back to Super Smash Bros., though.
Yeah.
Are there other details that were released? Because you're the one that watched the...
Like the separation.
You're going to have two buttons to press this time.
Whoa. Well, you're going to have customizable move sets, which is actually quite good.
I was disappointed by what they've done with Pit.
What about... Did you see what they've done to Samus with her Zero Suit?
Yes.
Well, yeah, they've separated the character out so that you get regular Samus and Zero Suit Samus.
Not just that, but did you see some of the artwork they released of her?
No.
For a start, she's... Yeah.
It looks like there must be a valve somewhere on the suit so that, you know, attach a little vacuum cleaner and suck all the air out so it can stick to her form.
Yeah. And the other thing is they've...
And she's sort of kneeling as well. She's, you know, sort of crouched down a bit.
Yeah,
in the shot they released, and it's just
She keeps doing that, like, spine-twisting boobs and butt pose that just only ever appears in, like, video game concept art. And also, someone compared it to some of the original Metroid, like, concept art, where there was a picture of her inside her suit, and it was like, yeah, she's, like, a seven-foot-tall, like, Amazonian woman, you know, who's, like, incredibly buff and all of this. And then you compare it to this one, where she's, like, 5'3" or something. And it's kind of...
Nicely curvy.
Yeah, yeah. And also she's wearing high heels. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was my favourite part of it, by which I mean, because you know, high heels would really work in a combat suit.
Mind you, I think the splitting of Zelda and Sheik makes far more sense. And obviously Sheik's outfit isn't so bad, thankfully. Mm.
I like the fact that they've actually given them kind of different move sets as well. So it's not just like a clone of the character. In fact, as far as I'm aware, there isn't actually any clones in this one.
I kind of like the thing about Samus is she's wearing high heels in this one, but I actually think the high heels are pretty cool. Like, I think it's ridiculous, but I was looking at them like, those are dope. Like, I like those.
I'd still love Bayonetta actually in there. I'm not entirely sure whether it should really fit in with the world or not, but
Bayonetta would be the weirdest.
I mean, to be fair, they included Snake in the thingy, and it was like. If you consider that even by that stage, the world of Metal Gear was a bit dark. It's like, okay.
I'm glad they actually got in Mega Man, though, because that's the one thing, that's the one character that I was actually genuinely missing from Blue.
It's not like Capcom are doing anything with Mega Man at the moment, so somebody's got to.
Yeah.
I was a bit surprised, though, that the 3DS version's coming out in the summer and then the Wii U ain't coming out till the end of the year.
And I think it makes sense to a certain extent, because, I mean, I doubt if
So wait, they've put up the release dates?
Yeah.
Because originally the Smash was coming out, like, not long after them turning off Nintendo Wi-Fi for Brawl.
No, that was Mario Kart.
No, Brawl is affected as well.
Yeah, I know Brawl's going to be affected, but they hadn't announced an official date anyway.
Okay.
So you can't exactly kind of say that it's postponed if they've never actually released a date. But I think it makes sense to a certain extent, because I don't think that people would actually fork out near enough £100 to buy both of the games together. So by separating them out, they're actually going to be getting more likely to have people that buy one than the other.
That's a good point, actually. True. I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, that's... And also it means they can get the DS one out for the people who actually want to play it on DS. And I don't reckon that's, like, as huge an audience as it will be for the home console one. And then get the Christmas market for the Wii U one. Because hopefully, I think they're hoping by that point more people will have Wii U. So.
Yeah.
Or they'll be able to improve their sales with a bundle.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be very politely quiet right now.
I know. Can we go back to Tomodachi Life for a moment? Oh my god. I think basically the Nintendo Direct video for Tomodachi Life needs to be watched.
Yeah.
And we will be linking to it in the show notes.
I will be watching it.
It's just the most insane thing. And you choose, like, the kind of voice that your character talks in.
Yeah.
It means talking.
You can completely customise, like, the behaviour and stuff as well.
Can you choose Batman voice?
I'm not entirely sure whether you'd be able to modulate it to a Batman voice.
Because the thing is, it's all kind of like busted sounding Microsoft Bob kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, I love that because the trailer has them all singing in that sort of terrible voice. That seems so funny to me. I love the idea of getting them to sing little songs with these, like, you know, I mean, it's fine, voice modulation. It's fine. It's okay. It's not great. It's exactly how I want it to sound, which is not great, you know?
I'd say that's a particular noise.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say that Nintendo are probably one of the few developers that seem to be kind of doing this kind of mixing up type thing. I mean, if you remember WarioWare, I know it's kind of got a bit old now, but, you know, WarioWare started out on the GameCube and it was like mini games and they were completely crazy and wacky and, you know, fun and everything. And now they've kind of come up with this. And I don't think I see a lot of that type of thing on, you know, many other kind of platforms, really.
I was disappointed with WarioWare for the Wii, and then the because they released something for the Wii, didn't they?
That one where they've basically stuck in like 12 games into the package, but the longer wasn't quite.
Yeah, I didn't like that. It hasn't. Yeah. They haven't been quite as oddball since the Cube, basically. So, well, actually, the DS game was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and I quite like the Wii one, but obviously it had problems because it was, you know, based on Wii controls, and early Wii controls were that.
I'm going to move us on now to what people have been up to, and Martin.
Hey.
What have you been up to, mate?
Nothing but Netrunner. I've just been playing Netrunner constantly for like 2 weeks. It's ridiculous.
Could you explain to our listeners what Netrunner is?
Okay, Netrunner is a living card game, which is basically like a collectible card game, except for you don't get random packets. You know what's in a pack when you buy it, and there's like a set number of them. So as far as I'm concerned, like a collectible card game, but without all the obnoxiousness of collectible card games. It's made by Fantasy Flight. It's an asymmetrical cyberpunk two-player card game thing, and it is devouring my life at the moment. I'm enjoying it so much.
I do feel like between you and is it Matt, that your tweets, or every other tweet, is Netrunner.
It's absolutely, it feels like. I've completely fallen down this hole on it. Basically, a bunch of people who I respect in games journalism, and friends of mine as well, have all fallen into this Netrunner hole all at once. It's actually based on a game. It's the full title is Android Netrunner. The original Netrunner came about in the mid-90s, I think. And it was like a collectible card game. And it was sort of put out there to kind of compete with Magic. But it never really took off. And also, the rules, as I understand it, were a lot more wishy-washy. Also, the card art, if you look back on it now, is really, really funny. Because it's all like 90s cyberpunk, which is to say, like, not particularly good bright pink polygon faces. I kind of love it. Whereas this new stuff, it's cleaned up. It's so well-balanced. It's absurdly well-balanced, considering how complicated it is. And, yeah, I am all over it. One Side plays as a corporation who has to advance agendas and build servers and try to score points or kill the runner. And the other person plays as the runner, who is like a cyberpunk, like outside of the system, who tries to hack into the servers and steal their agendas. And it works so well. It's so good, everybody. Go play some Netrunner.
I've already admitted the fact online that I am looking at buying the basic set before going on holiday for a bit this year. I've got something as backup for those inevitable moments where we end up stuck in a shallow.
I can't recommend it enough. It's really, really good.
Retroid.
Hello.
What have you been up to?
I have been watching The Wreck Trilogy, which is a series of horror, I suppose, Spanish films. The first, I think it's only the first two which have been remade in America land as Quarantine. Right. Yeah.
All right.
And the general plot is there's a reporter, a TV presenter and her cameraman follow some firemen just in a standard work night. So it's just a fly on the wall thing for TV, you know, nothing much. The firemen get a call saying there's trouble in this apartment block. And
it all goes great and they go home, the end.
Yes, yes, it's all fantastic. they get there, there's a little tabby caught in a tree and it can't quite get down.
It down. So, it's like, yeah. There's like 20 minutes of petting the cat. It's a very relaxing film.
I'd watch that.
Oh yeah, I would.
Anyway, but they get there and it's the old woman was screaming blue murder and we can't get into her apartment. So, you know, they get in there and it's all very quiet and it's all very strange. And she appears in the corridor and it's all darkly lit. And they go, you know, madam, are you okay? And she just runs up and bites one of there's a policeman there, you know, that got there first, but they've been waiting for the police. She bites this policeman on the neck. and tears a chunk out. So there's, you know, mad panic while they, you know, save the policeman, take him downstairs, and to cut a long story short, there appears to be some kind of infection in the building.
You're trying to be mysterious, but, like, as soon as we hear someone got bit on the neck, everyone knows what that is.
Yeah, it's basically zombies.
It's a shaky cam zombie film.
But this, you know, this policeman has been bit on the neck, and they're saying, you know, right, you know, we need to get him out, we need medical attention, and the building is being sealed up from the outside. And they won't let anyone out. And they're saying, you know, everyone, you know, back away from the doors and windows. We're not letting anyone out. Yeah. And, yeah, it turns out there is some kind of infection in the building. And anyone who gets bit gets ill. And then eventually, you know, starts turning on them. And it's a race to try and survive.
I really like Rec. I think it's a really smartly done film.
It is a very well done film. It is one of my favourite of the.
So are we talking more 28 Days Later Rage Virus, obviously, than The Walking Dead?
It's more sort of Rage Virus. Okay. There's a mention of rabies.
I won't spoil anything, but I'll also say for a zombie film, I think the last like 10 or 15 minutes are like one of the most memorable bits in it. It's really good. I really like Rec.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what happens, but
yeah, no, obviously not. But it's worth watching even just for that. But the rest of it's really great as well.
Yeah, so that's the first film.
Okay.
The second one, it's done by the same author with the same director, but to me, it's honestly as if someone has, you know, got a completely different team doing it. Martin, have you seen these?
No, I've only seen the first one. I was going to look into the second and third one. I heard they weren't as good, but like I can watch some not very good horror sometimes. So
with the first one, I mean, I'm not going to discuss the ending, but you know, there are hints of the church.
Yes.
Being involved.
Yes. It goes down that path a bit harder, yeah.
It goes all out on that path.
I don't know. I could watch that maybe.
With the second one, it's all demonic possession and speaking in tongues and.
That sounds kind of fun.
You might like it, but to me, after watching the first one, after how clever it was, and how it was presented, it just seemed to be, you know, why is it suddenly. You know, gone like this, because it happens almost concurrently with the first one, maybe about, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour kind of later. It's a special forces team that go in with this bloke in charge, and they're looking up things. They specifically go up into the penthouse at the top of the building, looking, you know, for specific churches.
Looking at the thing.
Yeah, looking at the thing. And it gets weirdly more demonic and almost magic.
That seems kind of interesting. I'm not sure. The trouble is, anytime with the sequel, obviously they step it up. So obviously they bring in some special forces, and it sounds like they wanted to go aliens compared to the first one's alien. Is that?
They've even got helmet cameras.
Oh, great. So, yeah. I was going to say, because obviously the first one's a shaky cam film.
The second one is a shaky cam film as well.
Yeah. I mean, if they have the helmet cameras, that's the device they use to shaky cam.
Yeah. To me, I mean, you may like it. I think it's, you know, it could be worth watching. But if you really like the first one and like, you know, what they did with it, then you know, to me, I'd be happier with the first film if the second one didn't exist. Now,
I reckon the first film works great because it does such a great job of like laying out the space of the building that they're in.
Yeah,
and like having that gradual, it's sort of got like some gothic horror going on in the way that it like moves through the building, and the building is as much part of it as it's really smart in that way. I like that a lot, but
I can't recommend the first one enough from that perspective. Now the third one, I think I might have liked the third one better than the second, but only because they just seemed to completely throw everything out.
Hmm.
It's like a completely different film. they try and tie it in with the original. You know, there's the mention of the dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it takes place at a wedding, so there's, you know, this big wedding do, and they've rented this, you know, like a hotel, maybe? You know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And it all goes to hell very quickly. But it goes a little bit... It's like an all-out horror zombie and demonic possession thing. And they completely give up on the shaky cam found footage approach that the first two went with. They just throw that out about 10 minutes, quarter of an hour into the film.
See, first off, the fact that it's at a wedding, it kind of makes it sound like the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Maureen Ponderosa wedding massacre episode.
Mm.
And also, if you throw out being set in the same building and you throw out the shaky cam, then it's not the same. It might as well just be something else. Might as well just be a zombie film at that point. That sounds ridiculous.
It is pretty much a zombie film. I kind of like the ending, but it was just... I'm not even sure why this has the same name anymore.
It could have been from anything. Yeah.
And apparently there's going to be a fourth film coming this year. And I'll watch it. But to me, there's the original wreck.
Yeah.
And then there are the other ones. The other ones can go sit in that corner.
So that sounds like a lot of horror movie franchises, honestly.
Yeah. Only wreck is my friend.
Kiki, what have you been up to?
Me, I've been exploring the dark psyche of the human mind, courtesy of the new series True Detective.
Which is very good.
It is blinding. It's very slow burner, but it's so well performed by Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey as the two detectives in the actual series. It's a 17-year-old... It's a murder hunt that goes on for 17 years. And it's just really gorgeously put together. It's one of the slowest... I'd say it's really slow burning. You have to really be invested in it to get everything out of it.
Especially it's kind of solved halfway through, or so they think.
Well, yes, so they think. But it's... I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure to watch for the last 8 weeks. Because it's nice that they've given all the little characters room to breathe as well. So you end up caring about the little guys as well as the main guys and seeing how they can actually expand during the series.
It sounds really... I've heard good things about it.
Mm. No, Matthew McConaughey's performance just blows your mind.
I've heard it compared unfavourably, but tonally somewhat to Top of the Lake.
I've not seen that.
You should watch that.
I saw some of the episodes of Top of the Lake. I would say that this is... Top of the Lake sort of lost me about episode four.
Ah.
You
should watch the end of Top of the Lake. I love Top of the Lake.
Yeah. Whereas this grabbed me... Episode one, I was a bit unsure about. At the end of episode one, I just turned to the other half and it's got promise, but bloody hell, that's twisted. I don't actually know if I can watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's really, because it really blurs the lines between good and evil as well.
True Detective is one of those series where I'm definitely planning on sort of buying it on disc, because obviously it's HBO, so it's going to be tied up with... Well, actually, they might not even release it until next year on disc over here, knowing what HBO is like.
I would say it with... When I was watching True Detective, I was getting the kind of feeling I got when I was watching Deadwood, in that it's a novel.
Yeah.
But on TV.
It really does drag you into the whole thing, and it's so beautifully shot as well. The start, you know, it's really stylized and that, and it's just... I mean, have you seen the last episode yet, Metroid?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, because I was sitting there with... And I was twisting in my chair because bits of it just chilled me to the bone. It was just, whoa, what the fudge is happening here?
Hey, Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Can you smell the flowers?
Yeah, I'm going to move us on before we get into any spoiler.
That's not a spoiler.
I know, but it just feels like we're slowly leaning towards that. It's the only thing we can talk about. Paul, what have you been watching?
I've watched Savages, which is an interesting film. Picked it up randomly from HMV. It was one of their, you know, kind of get this for, you know, like £5 or whatever when bought at the same, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's directed by Oliver Stone, which is actually quite interesting. So I wouldn't have necessarily have put him with this type of film. Because it's basically about a couple of drugs peddlers, in essence. Well, drugs manufacturers.
Yeah.
And the central characters involve actually Aaron Johnson, I believe it is. Well, it's Aaron Johnson marketed on this film, but in Kick-Ass and a couple of other things, I think it's Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Mm.
But basically, Kick-Ass is in this 18-rated film about being a guy that runs a marijuana-growing business in California.
Yeah, along with... basically, they've got a love triangle that doesn't actually go wrong. Which is kind of weird. It kind of starts out with this girl and this guy, you know, humping, and, you know, it's like, you know, that stuff's going on. And then the third guy comes back.
That's the original draft of Romeo and Juliet, you know.
But yeah, then this other guy comes back and is like, oh, is she meant to be with him or her? It's like, okay, she's doing both of them. Okay, and they're happy about that.
Oh, that's fair great. Enough. See, I've heard about, like, I saw someone tweeting the other day, like, oh, wouldn't it be great if, like, love triangles resolved by everyone realised, oh, like, moving in together and getting into, like, a polyamorous relationship. Mm. Wouldn't that be interesting? That does actually sound kind of interesting.
It is, actually. I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much, because at one point you do think it's going to turn into a kind of Romeo and Juliet type, you know, kind of situation, but... it doesn't.
Weirdly underage lovers.
not quite that aspect. But no, I think perhaps one of the least cool things, though, about the relationship is that the woman does end up in a bit of a damsel in distress
situation. But there's, like, two heroes.
Yeah.
So it's way better.
Two guys gunning for her.
It's a bit like the relationship between Mario, Luigi and Peach, if Mario... Actually, no, that's going into fan fiction that I don't want to...
Yeah,
we said
no
fanfic. I'm sorry.
But it's worth
watching. Follow my fan blog.
Savages is worth watching.
Why do they keep going down?
Savages is worth watching. I think I'm going to move this on now just because we need to move on.
I should marry Easy Peach.
Oh, God.
It's my chosen biotech.
No. I want to point out.
Why does she use a different name sometimes?
Oh.
Isn't that a twin sister or something?
I don't know.
I've been watching X-Files, damn it. X-Files.
X-Files.
And tell us, is the truth out there?
Perhaps. I'm not sure yet. Neither's Mulder. I'm partway through the sort of first edge of sort of season 2, and the X-Files are currently closed as like a department, and Mulder's just doing regular assignments, which slowly, other than when he's like transcribing the tapes of organised criminals that have been bugged and wiretapped. Other than when he's doing that, he's been assigned to cases which look like they should be regular cases that just draw upon his, like, experience with the behavioural sciences unit. Actually, they end up turning out to be X-Files in of themselves. And I watched Blood.
That's convenient.
Yeah, I watched Blood, which was a really weird one that had hints of kind of like paranoia about sort of like pesticides and stuff and what happened with DDT in the 1940s and 50s in the US and other bits of the Western world.
I vaguely remember that.
And like a nice dollop of MK Ultra just kind of thrown in there for good measure in terms of the sort of conspiracy theories that it was drawing upon. And I have a retrospective of that going up the same day this is coming out. That'll be on Hex. But yes, I watched that, and I was just kind of like, because I've seen it before, and it was just kind of like, so we've got all this stuff to do with these conspiracy theories, and then I was like, oh, and then there's the whole representation of the spree killer, because the whole thing that they didn't really like talk about too much, but it was about spree killers, you know, like, of course, people who do suddenly tip over the edge and go and kill lots of people, which is, you know, unfortunately something that actually happens a lot in America, more than they'd obviously like, and something that the media has issues kind of representing. And this is a 90s interpretation of it as well. So it's just kind of like, okay, all right. There's random people suddenly snapping one day and killing lots of people. And they were trying to find a rationale for it, it felt like. And obviously it's like, it's government conspiracy, pesticides, and LSD. As you do. And then the second episode I watched was... It's like it has no aliens in it, but it is actually one of the key episodes for like season two. Like, if you were gonna, you know, just watch the overarching plot episodes, Sleepless is one of those episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's one of those episodes and there's no aliens, but it introduces Alex Krycek, who's like, and X, who are like two very important characters. Yeah. In the whole mythos of everything. And I don't necessarily want to spoil it, that, you know, something that's like 20 years old. But yeah, old. You have to keep an eye on Alex. Yeah, so close eye on Alex. Oh, and one of the cooler appearances in the episode was by that actor who was in Final Destination and stuff.
Oh.
What's his face? The guy that... Is he usually an Undertaker in the Final Destination films?
Yes. Well, kind of creepy Undertaker.
The creepy Undertaker dude from the Final Destination films.
I can't remember his name, but yeah.
Never actually seen Final Destination.
He's been in tons of stuff. I think he was actually Spawn. In Spawn.
Yes.
Very cool.
That actor.
Yeah, obviously.
He had a role in Sleepless as... this NAM veteran who had been experimented on during NAM in a process of trying to like create the ultimate soldier, but it's not as you would think you'd be trying to create the ultimate soldier.
So. I mean, the episode's called Sleepless, and it's actually, looking back at it, there's actually quite a few different examples of what would happen if we removed sleep like different, you know, things. Because I think there was an episode of Angel... where Lorne had his sleep removed.
It's one of those. And, it's a theme that keeps cropping up every now and then.
And with American Dad, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is an episode where they're like, oh, take this drug and you don't need to sleep. Well, hey, look at all the things you can do. I'm going to move us on now to our final bit for tonight.
Cool.
Game genres we love or loathe. Dun, dun, dun. I would like to ask... our guest first, Monsieur Martin. What do you love or loathe?
well, I've been thinking about this just, you know, since I saw the question. I think the one that I want to say love, even though I think it loathes me, is first person shooters. Like, I hate the politics of so many first person shooters. I think they're kind of despicable in so many ways. And yet, I constantly dig playing them. Like, I feel bad saying that sometimes, you know? I throw so much shade about, like, first-person shooters generally, because they can be awful. But I'll play a good shooter for months sometimes. And then the one I loathe, even though I spend far more time... Like, this is a really ridiculous answer to this, so we're clear. Like, my answer is not a good one, but... find myself like platformers. I don't really like platformers very much. Says the guy who has logged damn near 300 hours on Spelunky. you know, I don't.
I query this, sir.
I can show you my Steam page. It's genuinely about 300 hours. It might be more actually, but yeah, I don't. I don't play a lot of platformers. I find them mostly fiddly. Like, I played Towerfall at Rezzed, and everyone I was with, like, loved Towerfall so much. And I can recognize Towerfall is good, but I didn't enjoy it very much. I don't much like that kind of game. And by the way, I just checked my Steam and I've played 255 hours of Spelunky. So there's an answer. So yeah, there's
45 more hours.
Yeah, and then
it's still not as many hours as I've played on Skyrim.
Yeah, I have to respect that.
I think I've clocked around the same amount of hours playing Team Fortress 2.
Fair enough.
Do you have all the hats yet?
You gotta be kidding.
Can one ever truly have all the hats?
No one can ever truly have all the hats. There's not enough inventory slots.
But it's just interesting sort of hearing you, Martin, say that you loathe Spelunky, but at the same time you've spent a sort of crazy amount of time on that.
Oh no, I love Spelunky. I love the hell out of Spelunky. I think it's an amazing
It's just platformers in general.
Yeah, that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah, platformers more generally. I never, you know, I loathe is probably too strong.
Mm-hmm. He's saying he hates Mario.
I kind of do. Like, that's the thing. I don't hate Mario. Obviously, you have to respect Mario, and I'll play a Mario game, but I never actually do play Mario. And I don't have a lot of fun when I do, because I just get pissed off and throw the controller. Which, I mean, I know is a very common experience, but for me, I don't find satisfaction in going back over and over to that. You know, I won't go back to Mario over and over. But I have, you know, also spent 255 hours on Spelunky, which, I mean, is not a pure platformer. It's a, you know, roguelike kind of doohickey, but still, I mean, it's built as, you know, you play it like you play a platformer. So yeah, you know, there's my answer, I guess.
Paul, what do you love or loathe?
I don't think I technically have any genres that I kind of dislike or like. I think it's more, I have to have or have to play games that seem special in some way, except when it comes to Mario games, because, you know, I'll play those all day. But, you know, sort of like, say, for example, racing games, there's got to be something unusual about it. I can't kind of play a straight racing game.
I feel you on that. I've never got into the Forza, like, Gran Turismo type games. They just never work for me.
I have to agree with those as well. I've tried. I'm thinking I should be enjoying this, but I don't have any urge to play anymore.
I mean, to be honest, I quite liked Driver San Francisco, because you can zap and kind of go in different cars and whatnot, and it kind of enhanced the game because of the gameplay mechanics of that. You kind of had to think literally outside your metal box.
Yeah.
I quite liked Blur, because it was like a cross between a serious race and Mario Kart, so you get the power-ups and shoot people off the tracks and stuff.
Yeah, it seemed like between Mario Kart and Need for Speed Underground.
Yeah.
Which was also a pretty good game, I think.
Definitely.
But I mean, I think it's similar type of thing with platformers, because obviously I grew up on platformers, you know, going from the NES and whatnot. And I'm technically good at them, but I just have very little interest in them, except for Mario. I'm not entirely sure why. But
is there anything you really, really love?
Really, really love. Actually, another thing is, when you said like first person shooters, to me those have to have something special in as well.
Like, I feel you on that.
I absolutely love GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, but I just can't really stand playing kind of Halo, Call of Duty, or, you know, a whole host of like other ones that just seem, you know, very, very similar.
See, that seems really strange to me, because I feel like you could draw a very direct line between those games. I mean, even like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, they were very, for their time, very, very straight shooters, you know?
And I think they did they did stuff that, you know, hadn't been done previously. I mean, say, for example, GoldenEye, obviously, that was, you know, kind of the whole multiplayer aspect stuff.
Yeah,
Perfect Dark, it kind of introduced secondary weapon functions. It had in, like, a whole load of different simulants. You can command them, you can do this, you can do that, and you could do, like, co-op, counter-operative, you know, all sorts. So,
but I think, you know, so did games like Halo. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend Halo in 2014 or anything, but, like, I just had to look at the date. God, what is wrong with me today? but, yeah, I think each of those has been kind of innovative in their own way in terms of the very straightforward kind of shooters. I mean, you know, like if I was drawing the progression, it would be GoldenEye, and then I, you know, if you started with like Doom or whatever, then it'd be like GoldenEye, then Halo, and then I guess the Call of Duty games would possibly be the next step with Battlefield in there somewhere for that massively multiplayer kind of do thing.
I even tried at one point, I think it was The Conduit on Wii. Yeah. And I played through a little bit of that because I thought, you know, Wii controls, you know, might be quite interesting and whatnot. And I just really couldn't get into it.
You spent a whole evening on that.
Yeah, and then never touched it again.
Nope. I remember that. Cookie, what do you love or loathe?
I think with mine, it's at this point in my life, it's more about sort of big action sort of story games that give you a full-on ambience into the world that the designers made. Stuff like Bioshock Infinite and Uncharted. I just love the fact that you've got a big story to unravel. They've got loads of detail around the place. I was quite one of my favourite games last year was Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider's amazing.
It was amazing because of the detail that had gone into it and that. And I just seem to be going more towards the single player sort of big action games where there's a nice big story to unravel. I can take my time in it. I can walk around, run around, do what I want.
Have you noticed with that type of game how they're kind of introducing more RPG elements into stuff?
Yeah. Like Batman. I think that's got a big thing to it as well now, to be fair.
Yeah, I feel like some part of that might, I mean, obviously RPG elements come from everywhere. Let's not localize it in this way. But I feel like part of that is going to come from the massive success of Bethesda generally. And, you know, things like Skyrim and Fallout and Oblivion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
I was just going to say there, though, some of the RPG elements, you know, mentioned Batman there. I'm thinking, are those RPG elements, or are they more sort of Metroid, Castlevania elements?
Well, I mean, you kind of level up with it, and leveling up is, Metroid. I would consider it a feature of RPGs in general.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're kind of dealing in terms of kind of gaining more equipment, then yeah, I can see where you come from there. Because I mean, that you know, Zelda, you know, Metroid.
Yeah, because it's you know, getting you know, more lives and more energy, getting stronger. You suddenly gain abilities so you can do new things in environments you've already been in, or you can get to places that you just haven't been able to before.
Yeah. But I think I think that comes from a reward of getting past bosses and stuff rather than a reward of basically just generally progressing through the game, if you know what I mean. So, say for example, if you stay in a certain area and basically kill loads and loads and loads of enemies, you know, again and again, then in an RPG, you'll, you know, continue to level up. Whereas if you're in something like Metroid or Zelda, then, you know, you're basically just kind of wasting time.
I guess that's sort of, that's a thought I hadn't really had before, but with games like Batman and Tomb Raider, they're the most obvious examples I think of, but I think they're definitely, it's not a direct line, but there's definitely the same kind of reward system that you get from like a Metroidvania kind of game. In that, you know, you get the thing which lets you get through the area that took you half an hour before in 5 minutes.
Yeah, there's no, you know, spending several hours beating up rats at the start of, you know,
Everest
or something like that. You know, if you do something low level and crap enough, if you just do it just for long enough and all the little numbers add up and eventually you just go, yay!
And it's the kind of pacing which you can only really, well, I mean, some people try and bring it into the online, I guess, like experience systems which appear in online multiplayer kind of are trying to attract that same kind of feeling.
Yeah.
But it probably works best in single player where you can pace it out and,
get rid of all them screaming 13-year-olds as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, get rid of them. And the general genre that I absolutely love, I've been thinking really hard about this all day. And it has to be MMOs.
Is that just MMOs in general or massively multiplayer RPGs?
I think it's just MMOs in general. I just don't seem to have the, I don't know, the patience, I suppose, to deal with them.
To, like, personally, deal with strangers.
I don't seem to have the money.
Well, it's all right as well. It's the fact that I like my game to have an ending. Like I said with my favourite genre, I like it to have a storyline that you fulfil. You get to the end and you think, yes, done it. Now,
with MMOs, is it the fact it's the type of game it is, or is it other people?
Well, I must admit, I've always... See, to be fair, a couple of years ago when DC Universe Online came out on the PS3,
yeah,
I actually played a bit of that, and I got on with quite a few of the people there, and I started doing missions and that with them.
Mm.
But again, it just kept going. You know, there just seemed to be... I don't know, there was just no cohesion, is a way. I suppose there's your quests and everything, but then after that you just go on to your next quest and you get these little bits of storyline thrown in for it. But to me, there just isn't that finale.
Catharsis.
Yeah, there's no ending to it. It just goes on and on. You know, I kind of get that.
But there again, that's one of the things that I like about Team Fortress 2.
But then there is World of Warcraft, which really fucked me off as well. When I signed up for a 14-day trial to see what all the fuss was about, and everybody just kept on going, come join my guild, okay, I'm coming over to you. Ha-ha, I've tricked you, I kill you. Oh, fuck off, you wanker. Yeah, you're level 50, big whoopee-doo, I'm level 1, so stop picking on me, you twat. Go away.
Tell you what you should do, is you should get the .hack games, because that's kind of the best of both worlds, where you have, like, you know, it's meant to be kind of like an online world and whatnot. But they're all computer controlled.
You say that the .hack games that came out for VPS2, except for the first two, the latter two, like out of the four, kind of rare these days.
That's true, yeah. But I mean, it kind of has the best of both worlds in a way.
Yeah. I mean, with the DC versus DC Universe Online, what I liked about it was you could just go off and do your own thing. Mm. You could go off and do one quest here by yourself, or you could help somebody else. Do you know what I mean? That was quite nice, but they just, I suppose, time as well. I just didn't really have enough time, I suppose, to really invest myself in it as much.
If I didn't have a full-time job, I'd start playing EVE again.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was that case to it. I started playing Uncharted 3 again last week. You know, did a sizable 4-hour chunk of it. Got to where I thought I'd got to a bit of it, and then I could just come off for the evening, and then I can go back to it when I'm off for this week. Whereas the MMOs, you seem to have to invest so much into it, you know, and it just seems, it just doesn't seem to have the rewards that I'd quite like to get from it if I did invest that much time in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, let's see what you're saying. I don't think, obviously Team Fortress 2 doesn't really suffer from that. Really, because you can kind of drop in and drop out of the game, and like nobody levels in that respect.
I mean,
you basically just get kind of extra weapons here and there that are actually incredibly balanced.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, and it's free to play.
Retroid, what do you love or loathe?
Ooh, now love. I'm fairly eclectic because I was looking at my game shelves earlier and my game list on Steam, which is a stupid size. Over 400 now.
Awesome. Oh, blimey.
and that's with half the stuff I've got actually not listed in it, because, I'd say half. You know, a bit. I mean, you know, I've not connected my Origin, Uplay, you know, stuff, because there's no point. But now... I was trying to think of this earlier, and it's just, do I like open world games like Skyrim and Assassin's Creed? And the answer is yes, I do. I really like those, and I can just, you know, dump hours into them doing, you know, especially in something like Skyrim or Oblivion, actually not that much at all. You can spend hours doing virtually nothing. Just exploring, finding things, getting little trinkets, absolutely nothing on there, you know, the main story. But
yeah, I think I've witnessed Emily spending hours doing nothing on Skyrim.
Yeah, I thought so. And that's the kind of thing I love. But also, I do really like quite focused single player, you know, channeled campaigns like, you know, the BioShocks.
Mm.
Or, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Uncharted, where you can just, you know, dip in or out. The only thing I can really think of, I'm not really that fond of MMOs because of the whole people being dicks. And the, you know, the time investment where you've got to, you know, be there. And it's like, no, I don't want to have something else, that, you know, with commitments. Game playing is, you know, kind of something that I, you know, I do to get away from commitments.
But saying that, didn't you like Animal Crossing? And that, doesn't that have, like, some time commitments?
It does, yeah. But then I can just say, Sodja, I'm not lighting your lighthouse. I can't be arsed tonight. And it doesn't really matter. You know, I just won't get, you know, something at the end of it that I otherwise would have. So, you know,
the news report saying you just killed 3 sailors for not letting them light in the way to them.
Yeah. You know, just some corpses of, you know, different animals washing up on the beach. And you go, I'd feel bloody awful then. But with things like Animal Crossing, it's more, you know, there's a game mechanic there.
Mm.
It uses the game mechanic. I really enjoy something with a game mechanic. I can just, you know, let's go here. You know, let's walk in this direction and see what's here and discover it. And if there's a tomb or a crypt, you know, specify in the game here, not in real life.
Yeah.
I can, you know, go in there and explore, and I can, you know, do all these things. And, you know, there are still game mechanics, you know, satisfying, like you're getting loot or money or more kills, or you're leveling up a skill. Yeah, it's MMOs, I don't have the time for, and I don't have the money for. Sports games, sport, so no. Unless it's something like Speedball, in which, you know, I'll play that because yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking as a jock, then let me tell you about sports games while as I give jock. You a swirly in the toilet, you nerd.
No.
So much for Nerds Assemble. We've been infiltrated.
Down a pool now.
Nerd down hierarchy.
What do I love in life? I, despite the amount of time that I put into something like Skyrim, it's still not my top favourite genre.
I thought you were going to say you hate it. Just
no, it's not. It's like open world.
I just love torturing myself.
Open world isn't my sort of. I can't say open world's my favourite genre because I only like the way Bethesda does it. For instance, so I'm not.
What about
that
BioWare?
BioWare's not open world in my.
I have to say, BioWare's not.
I like the way Bethesda does it. But my favourite, the thing that I'll like have lots of random fun on if I can bring myself away from the desire to craft orc armour is sort of shooter games with powers. Was that the mouse dying?
Sorry.
Poor mouse.
But yeah, to, shooting games with powers. So, not necessarily first person shooters, sometimes third person. But yeah, I do like the BioShocks, but also really like the Darkness games. And I'm trying to think of other games where I've been shooting things and I've got powers. Oh, obviously, I really like Second Sight. You know, I've made a video about that before. So I really like having, like, oh, I don't just have bullets to hand. I can either set people on fire with my mind, or, you know, like maybe throw them across something, or have a piece of demonic dark soul stuff just kind of rip them in half.
Which is actually quite interesting, because you're the only one of us that has actually defined a genre away from its gameplay mechanics. And, you know, traditionally, computer games have always been defined by how you play it, in essence. But you've kind of, you know, kind of said something very different.
That's because it's so damn difficult.
Yeah, you can't really, you know, kind of lump them all into one, because, I mean, theoretically, you could have a puzzle game that, you know, kind of...
Exactly,
yeah. No, it's more the difference with something like Second Sight, Darkness, and Bioshock is they're still narrative-led games. You're taking on the role of a protagonist and progressing through a narrative. Puzzle game, you might do that, but you're not actively in there in the role, and that's the thing. I don't like puzzle games. Puzzle games can go fuck themselves. I hate them. I really like that. Whether it's something as simple as it were, or demonic as Tetris or Bejeweled, I also hate puzzle games with that are actual kind of, you know, logic based puzzles. I'm not actually that keen on Portal. Either one of them. I don't like Professor Layton.
BioShock T-shirt.
I don't like Professor Layton. I think I liked the first. What's his face? Ace Attorney.
Oh, Phoenix Wright.
Liked the first Phoenix Wright, and then they went and made the second one where they just completely messed with the fact that none of the friggin' puzzles made any sense. There was no logic behind them anyway. So, I just hate puzzle games. They're just the most frustrating things. I'd rather be slicing something up with demonic tentacles than trying to puzzle my way out of a puzzle. I puzzled my way out of a load of puzzles to get my GCSEs. I don't need to be doing that anymore with my life. The closest I'll come is when I'm trying to figure out bits of code or read Google Analytics. That's as close to puzzles in everyday life for me, because it's more work to me than play.
I didn't come here to think. I came here to burn fools. What do you think this is?
Which is actually Emily
what I said in my GCSEs, but they didn't appreciate. They didn't appreciate that.
Emily leaping through a portal and punching Pythagoras.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah, pretty much.
Punching.
There's room for thinking, but I do so much of it as part of my job that I don't.
I have to respect that.
I don't want to do it when I play video games. It's like
you don't want to think when you play video games.
I want to think about story now because there's no story in what I do much in the everyday. I like some story thrown in there that actually makes sense.
Has there been any puzzle game that you've actually liked?
Well, as I mentioned, the first Phoenix Wright was kind of okay with it. But
see, I never thought of those as puzzle games. I thought of them as like graphic novel kind of things with
No, it's because
the puzzle elements. Like
to me, I felt they were as puzzle games, and I mean, obviously, it's not as obvious as Professor Layton.
Yeah.
But there's obviously a reason why, you know, Professor Layton and Phoenix Wright have been teamed up in a game because they do share similar elements that aren't necessarily of a narrative kind of origin.
I thought it was community service for both of them.
But yeah.
See, what's your like? Have you played a bunch of the old like LucasArts games, stuff like? You know, what's your feeling on those, like, adventure games, things like that? Because they often have, like, puzzly elements. Like,
I've tried playing a few things from that kind of period, which, because I wasn't playing video games when a lot of that stuff came out. I wasn't allowed.
I'm so old.
The one thing that I've tried the most is playing The Longest Journey.
Oh, yeah. I heard good things about that. I never actually played it.
I kind of like the story, but the puzzles just kind of ruin it for me.
Walking Dead?
Yes, that was the other thing. I was going to say Walking Dead, and the most recent one, which, I mean, I guess if you didn't like them, then it's very much a throwback, is things like Broken Age.
Walking Dead, I kind of got on with because it was based a bit more on, it sounds weird to say it, but real life. Like,
I kind of feel you on that.
The logic was kind of real life based and survival based.
So I wouldn't consider The Walking Dead actually a puzzle game.
No.
It was far more narrative driven than being driven by the puzzles. Like, and obviously, like, there was no, in a way, almost no wrong answer with any of the conversations you had.
Yeah.
It just obviously eventually determine how the story ended for
and how many
the
characters you kept alive.
Yeah.
Freeze block.
wasn't it the salt lick? That was the thing.
But yeah, I So I'm okay with Walking Dead. I quite liked playing Walking Dead games, but I just mean puzzles don't get along. And it turns out, yeah, though...
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I understand you on that.
Yeah, but it turns out, though, that semi-regular guest and listener Martin Lejeune, he tweeted at us when I was asking about it, and he says he quite likes point-and-click games because the cool kids never pick on me for not doing very well on them. apparently. I can't tell if he was being semi-serious about that or not. Because, yeah, there's an exclamation mark at the end of that tweet. So...
Exclamation. Yeah, but there's no tongue out, Smiley, so you can't quite tell. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, point-and-click games, Zack and Wiki. That was actually a pretty awesome game.
Mind you, dear, we kind of like worked together on that, so I didn't feel quite the mental anguish that I would otherwise feel on most other games.
I think it was mostly me and you going, hey, do that over there.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a cute game.
Do the thing.
Do the thing. All the things. I'm afraid, though, that is all we've got time for this week, this quite packed episode,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it really is.
So it's goodbye from...
Me, Martin, your friend. I am at Bionic Sheep on Twitter, or you can go to onovideogames.com to see stuff from me, or you can go to my music Tumblr if you want some music, because I did the music for this show, by the way. At bionicsheep.tumblr.com.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka Cookie. I'm @onearmed_cookie on Twitter, and you can find me on lurkingaroundthegamejar.com.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blair, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewitt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can find Nerds Assemble over at nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher now. We're on Twitter as Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And don't forget to check out hexdimension.com because there's, you know, stuff on there that's actually quite cool to read. You know, you might learn something about William Friedkin. Who knows? You know, that sort of thing has definitely gone up now. Go read it. Read about the film, the greatest films you've probably never watched. Go on. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Peace.